morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and we're inviting you to come back to Portland, Oregon with us as we continue on the story of our great adventure there.
There we go. It was quite an adventure and was prompted by a couple of events that were going on, one of which we're going to include in this week's program and the other one we're going to include in next week's program.
But we are going to start it with a major discovery, a brand new place that's I could go live there.
It's almost a scoop for On the Menu Radio because, and the story will be evident as we talk through the interview. So first up, Pierre Zreich, who's the general manager of the Allison, a new resort and spa about 35 miles outside of Portland, Oregon. And then the person who started our search for this place, Chef Nathan Lockwood. I'm sure you'll find them both interesting, and this is a place you're going to want to mark in your travel plans for the future.
By now, listeners, you probably know that On the Menu's been spending several days in the great western state of Oregon, and in this interview we have a scoop, slightly delayed scoop, bringing it to you, but as far as we're concerned, it's a scoop, because we found out about the Allison Resort near Newburgh, Oregon, at 8 o'clock on Saturday morning. Except it wasn't about the Allison, it was the name of a chef we ought to look up while we could in Oregon, and his name had Lock in it somewhere. 15 minutes later, thanks to the cooperation of Laura, the sales director at the Allison, we had an arrangement to visit today, and now we have the great pleasure of meeting the general manager who's been with this project since the beginning. His name is Pierre, and Pierre, I'm going to let you do your last name. Welcome to On the Menu.
Thank you. It's Pierre Zreich.
Zreich.
Zreich, that's it.
Yep. And, of course, Pierre is a well-established professional in the area of especially opening resorts, although you said to us this one is so special in itself that you think this is the last one you're going to open?
Absolutely. That's my commitment to everyone, to the staff and to the family and to the community.
And you're going to tell us about the family. I mean, the history, the backstory of this resort is incredible.
This is not your everyday resort story.
No, it's not.
Tell us a story.
Definitely not. Well, I've been lucky to be part of the opening. Was hired a year and 2 months ago to be part of this opening, this fabulous, literally unique place in the entire state of Oregon. And I'm willing to say even in the Northwest, as you can see in it today, you went around. What the family gave us. We're sitting on 35 acres within 85 rooms and suites. And the range, the smallest room sat at 490 square feet up to the largest suites, 1,500 square feet. And the rates start at $295 all the way up to $1,100. The restaurant, as you see around you right now here, we can seat 100 people with an open bar, an open kitchen. You can see the chef preparing all your feast, and it's a lot of fun to sit on the counter and watch them performing all these miracles. We have the spa. The spa is 15,000 square feet, and we have 12 treatment rooms. We have 12,000 square feet of meeting space. The ballroom can seat up to 250 people, and we have the boardroom. We'll seat 18 people. Plus, what's very intriguing and very interesting here, we have a chef's table.
Literally, oh, I love that chef's table.
You've seen it.
Oh,
it
yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's gorgeous.
And literally what Nathan, the chef, will come to your table and will ask you about the menu. He can prepare a menu just for you, or you can just pick and choose from the menu itself. And that's a show.
We're going to interview him because he's just spectacular. Tell us about the vistas are gorgeous here. You're looking out over on one side the vineyard and another side.
Our location is tremendous. We're really sitting like right in the middle. We have our own Pinot vineyard. We're growing our own Pinot Noir, and you can have rooms and you'll be overlooking the vineyard itself, or the other side looking facing south, and you'll be facing the valley basically. And the views, you can see the view of the mountains, the range of the coast. It's really very soothing and very interesting, and you really don't feel like you're in Newburgh. It's really, we're lucky. The designer really done a lot of work.
Yeah, the designer, the same, it was the architect who did the interior design and the spa design.
And the landscaping. They done
everything,
yes. And that was, we had a great team. They're a super, super team to work with.
The thing that impresses me is that there was no hesitance on any detail about getting the top quality.
And that was Joanne Austin's dream. That's what
she
wanted. That's the owner, absolutely. That was her dream. That's what she wanted. She's building it as a legacy. She did not want to build it just like tomorrow morning, just after start making some money, sell it. It was a known thing that it was built for the as a legacy. And she's building it for the community and the one community too. Because really there's nothing, literally, in a classy hotel you can stay unless you reach all the way to Portland.
And the pricing is so incredibly reasonable that it's accessible to almost anybody, any group. So you could come here and get married, right?
Absolutely. We have our first wedding Saturday. That was our opening weekend.
Yeah, it's so funny because you've been having soft openings, I understand, but the official opening was Friday, and there was a 250-guest wedding on Saturday.
And that one, we were very successful. We practiced. As a matter of fact, I got notes and I got an email from the bride how happy they were.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was a good feeling. Every single manager was here working. It's a teamwork. And that's what felt so good.
And it's going to be a home base for tours of the wine country.
Absolutely, 100%. All the winemakers, wineries are literally, you can see a winemaker or two every night in this restaurant.
Now, we are about 40 miles from Portland, guessing?
Yeah, more or less.
And driving time from the airport would be
Around 45 minutes, 50 minutes. Yeah, 45 to 50 minutes.
So it's extraordinarily convenient, and you can branch off in the several different directions of the several different AVAs that today make up the vineyards in northern Oregon.
Yeah, and you know, we're extremely well positioned. As you stated, we are like around 40, 45 minutes from Portland. You're an hour and a half from the beach, great beaches, and literally all the vineyards is in our own backyard. The closest one is like 2 miles away from us. And the rest is, the sky is the limit. And we have some awesome, awesome wines. And all the winemakers and wineries are so supportive of this project. And that makes it so good.
Okay. Now, all in the decor, all the artwork is original and local.
Exactly. Lonnie Parrish, the daughter of Joanne. And Joanne and the family, they literally hand-picked every piece of art in the whole hotel. Every single one of them is original art.
It's hard to believe that there could be this space at this particular place before this existed, because it's so perfectly nestled into its surroundings, and it has its primary place in the community already.
Exactly. And, you know, we have been doing a lot of work on it for, you know, the last year and a half, basically, trying to promote it. And when people came in to visit, we've done just an open house just for the community. And that was stunning. We had 2,000 people coming through the doors in pretty much 8 hours. And Joanne, that's what she wanted, just for the community.
So you opened your doors for a whole day?
Pretty much.
He said, if you're from Newburgh, come on along and visit with us.
Not only for Newburgh, from McMinnville, from St. Paul. She wanted the community. That was very, very important for Joanne, for the community to understand we're there for them. And they have been doing this for ages. They have been here, Joanne and Ken and the family, for 7 generations, as stated earlier. And that's very important to her. It's very, very close to her heart.
How about the name, the Allison? It seemed like an unusual name until I realized why it's called the Allison.
Well, the gentleman who really done all the studies to find out when we were under the Missoula flood, and he's the gentleman, Ira Allison, who did all the research, and they named it after him in his honor, basically.
So he was a geologist, I guess,
back in
specializing in studying the post-ice age.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
In this vicinity.
And he's from Oregon State, too, and the family's from Oregon State. Then there is something there, too.
There's something else going on here it's important that you understand, because Pierre is a great hotelier. Trust me, this man doesn't miss anything.
Thank you.
So every little bit of service-related things you can imagine is embodied here. So if you turn around and think you want something,
it's there already.
It's there already because somehow the staff has ESP.
Yes, they do.
And they care, and they all smile, and they're clearly having a wonderful time here. And it all comes from the boss.
All of us, plus the family too, and they're a great team. We're having fun with it, and we're lucky. I'm really lucky to have all these people working for us.
How about the website? Is it up yet?
Yeah, the website has been up, and it's an ongoing, as you know, it's ongoing updating. But Frank, we just updated our wine list last Friday, the menus. It's an ongoing. It okay. doesn't stop.
And
so,
the address?
So let's do the name. It's because it's A with two L's.
The Allison, Allison.com.
And if you read about the Allison elsewhere, ignore the fact that it's a rumored place that's got to open. You know it's open because we're here.
Yes, exactly.
It's open for business. It's a great place. This is a great part of the country as well, but you can't make a better choice than staying right here with Pierre and his team.
Thank you, and hope to see you all again and again.
Oh, we're planning on living here.
Good, no problem. We'll have the big suite for you.
And now we know Pierre has to rush off because he has to make other people's dreams come true.
Absolutely.
Pierre, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Bye. Nathan Lockwood is executive chef at this resort, the Allison, and its flagship restaurant called The Jury. Is that correct, Nathan?
That is correct.
Okay. We'll come back to that in a minute. First, I want to thank you for having an absolutely exquisite meal.
You're welcome.
I'm really very picky, and I can't say anything bad about any single thing. In fact, I can only talk in superlatives about your style, which, as far as I'm concerned, exemplifies perfect balances of flavors. It really was delicious.
Oh, thank you very much.
Your background, I mean, you were a CIA Hyde Park graduate.
Correct.
You have worked at really important restaurants, to name a few, Fleur de Lis in San Francisco. And you came here from Fork, actually.
That's right, yes.
And you started a tradition there that you have made part of your operation here, which is your kitchen garden. Tell us a little bit about your garden.
Well, it was really more of a question at Fork of, will it be possible to produce a significant portion of the produce for this restaurant and still be able to find enough time to get it cooked and cleaned and harvested and on the plate? And then the answer, surprisingly, I think, turned out to be yes, it was possible. And it really was enjoyable and exciting to see come together.
And how big is it?
The garden there was about half of an acre.
No, here.
The garden here is over an acre. So we have a 3/4 acre fenced vegetable garden. We also have a large on-site herb garden and then numerous fruit trees and other herb patches around the property.
I hear all the managers went out and planted this.
We did, yeah.
Which
we did.
Could be a hazard.
We did it on the hottest day of the year. So it was fun for the first 5 hours, and then it was painful for the last two. So
I said that was where checking out the wine list came in.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Now, the name of this restaurant is Jury, and that's very special, isn't it?
That's right. It's named after the soil here in the Willamette Valley that makes such great Pinot Noir growing regions. So it's one of the three main soil types. We have Pinot grapes on property planted in the Jury soil.
Well, the restaurant is certainly gorgeous. The vistas over the vineyards and the various plantings, gardens, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it really
is. Big windows. And then you have that counter space, which is fun. If we weren't doing this whole recording thing, I think we'd have eaten right there.
Right. Yeah. It's proven to be really popular. Guests are sitting there every meal period and really enjoying interacting with the cooks. So it has turned out to be a lot of fun.
And then the spectacular chef's table.
Right.
Tell us about that. That's really gorgeous.
The chef's table is in the back of the kitchen. It is a really beautiful space. There's a library wine cellar back there with it. So a nice marble plating area so that we can interact with the guests and plate right next to the table.
Well, you're hoping, as you said, that this will be a destination restaurant. And that's quite possible since it's not very far outside of Portland, is it?
No, and it's really quite a pleasant drive. It's a beautiful drive.
Yeah.
So.
And who's been coming to eat here now so far? You're just brand new. I mean, let's repeat that.
So far
that.
We've had all sorts of different parties in. A lot of local curious folks have been in to eat, which is great. We'd love to see the locals coming in. We've had a lot of guests down from Portland. We've actually had a number of chefs locally, and coming in to see what
the chefs would
see if we're messing it up yet or not.
And it's such a great crew, this whole chef thing in Portland.
The food scene in Portland has been really exciting. I'm really happy to be here and be becoming a part of it. It's more than I expected it to be, and it's really farm driven and seasonally driven, and the quality of food I think in the Portland area is above my expectations. It's really nice to see.
Even though you're going to be part of this group, even though you don't have a sleeve tattoo, everybody seems to be tattooed on both arms. Although I have to admit, the funniest one was the sardine can that I saw.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Who have been the big influences in your cooking style?
Really, Hubert Keller and Suzette Gresham, I think, are the two chefs that I think about those experiences in their kitchens virtually every day.
But French, and you're not really, are you?
I cook with a lot of French technique, and I'd like to think I organize my kitchen in a French fashion. I'd like to think that Hubert would be proud of the kitchen if he came in and took a look at it. I try to line things up as neatly as he would have them in his kitchen. So, and I do think that's important on a day-to-day. Cleanliness and organization are really the backbone of keeping consistency and quality.
Is he as much fun on a day-to-day basis as he is on a socializing occasionally basis?
A little more
basis?
Quiet in the kitchen than he tends to be in the public eye, but is still working with Hubert was a privilege and a lot of fun, yeah.
Now, I imagine that your favorite products to work with change with the seasons all the time, right? But you must have some favorites. What do you really love?
My favorite product to work with, honestly, is whatever is looking the best at the time. So we're really hitting the end of heirloom tomato season here. We've got the last, and sometimes the last tomatoes of the season are the most beautiful. So those are looking really nice in the walk-in right now, coming straight out of the garden every day. And we're starting to look towards some fall crops, so our first kabocha squash are coming off the vines, and I'm getting excited about dandelion greens, broccoli rabe, and baby arugula, and all these things. Or baby mustard greens.
Dandelions, I always think of as spring.
Well, you can grow that. You can grow a dandelion anytime. They're going to be a little sweeter and juicier when the weather is cold. Mm-hmm. So in Oregon, you can get them in the fall. We planted them about 8 weeks ago, and they're coming in right now. And then you can get them in the spring again. During the summer months, they get really heavily bitter. Which
I know.
Some like, and I like, but...
How about going over just some of these in detail, these dishes, like a variation you had of this heirloom tomato and arugula salad. Do you want to talk to us about
sure.
that?
Sure. Well, it's really a very simple dish. We're getting beautiful baby arugula from the garden. It's just dressed with lemon juice and olive oil. Burrata cheese is just a fresh, cream-filled mozzarella cheese, and cuts the bitterness of the arugula really nicely. Different colors of heirloom tomatoes are just dressed with fleur de sel, olive oil, and a little bit of minced shallot.
It was so sweet and beautiful.
And the only other thing on the plate really is an arugula pesto that's trying to keep it local here in Oregon is the garden arugula, some hazelnuts, some olive oil, some parmesan.
I usually use hazelnuts.
Usually I do it with pine nuts.
Yeah, well, when I do my arugula pesto, I've been doing, cans.
Pistachio.
No,
oh, is that right?
No, pecans. No, the pistachio.
Walnuts and arugula are a great pair also. Really nice pair,
too. Yeah, but I think, I love experimenting with those combinations.
Right.
As Peter said, I do the cilantro with pistachio, which is pretty good, too.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah.
Okay, what next did we have?
Let's see, we got a little tomato flecked ravioli for you.
Oh, that I love the ravioli. Tell us what was in that.
Yeah, sauteed cherry tomatoes there. And inside the ravioli was just a mixture of four cheeses, a little bit of chili flake. Really pretty
simple chili,
dish.
Yeah, there was a deep heat in that. It was
Yeah, deep-seated heat, hopefully. Not too spicy up front, but it'll get you at the back.
And the Peter, it was crazy. He liked his better than mine.
The gnocchi?
Yeah.
We do a Yukon Gold potato gnocchi, and they've proven to be very popular. Try to keep that as light as possible. And that's in a little ragu of Afferton lamb right now, which is a local gentleman, Mike Afferton. He's raising lamb for us. We get a whole lamb in twice a week.
Oh, that's good. So, Afferton.
Yeah. Yeah. And the lamb is spectacular, so it's really pretty exciting.
Yeah. Okay, then we moved on. What did we have next?
Let's see. After that, we had a halibut for you.
Oh, the halibut.
That's a good example of just moving towards winter here a little bit. We have a crispy potato crust on the halibut. And really simple plate up. It's just some roasted wild mushrooms. There's golden chanterelles and matsutakis in there. And on a bed of braised leeks. And in the leeks are just leeks, a little bit of butter, and a little bit of parsley.
You also had some florets from
We did put some some flowering broccoli rabe florets around the plate, and also some shaved maitake mushrooms.
You just have those little touches, like I was talking about on the cheese plate. I went nuts over the celery garnish on one of the cheeses, and I asked you what was in that. What was in there?
Oh, celery is one of my favorite things. I think it's one of the most underappreciated vegetables, and we just really try to bring the flavor out of the celery. So that's simply just the celery heart sliced nice and thin, and then we make a celery stock from all the tougher outer pieces and braise the celery hearts in the celery stock. And then after they're cooled, we dress them with a little bit of Oregon black truffle pate and some olive oil. And that's all.
Yums. and then we had...
That's all he says. We just want to add a little more sophistication to this little piece of celery.
Well, no, it's all this detail. It's like this resort has so much richness in its detail. And your cooking style matches that perfectly.
Well, thank you very much.
And what about desserts? We had, against my better judgment, we had two desserts. But well, you know what? The one you gave me was not so dead sweet that I'm not a sweet person.
I try to move away from too much sugar in dessert, especially at lunchtime. For me personally, I'm not a huge sweet tooth myself.
Me
neither. But did you have the semifreddo or the fruit and sorbet?
The fruit and sorbet.
Okay. So that's a Lebna sorbet. We're making a house-cured yogurt, and we're draining more of the whey off than you normally would, so it's a little bit richer than a traditional yogurt. Then it's just lightly sweetened, seasoned with lemon juice, and frozen. And that's one of my favorite things right now, it really is. We tried to put whatever beautiful seasonal fruit we can on that plate. So.
Yeah, it was good. You have golden raspberries. Do you grow those, too?
Celia Austin is actually growing those for us, so Joanne's daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
And the golden raspberries have been coming down from her property. The Italian prune plums come from our orchard, which is about a mile and a half away here. We also have black walnuts, hazelnuts, apples, pears, cherries, suckle pears.
Oh, wow.
All kinds of fun stuff coming out of the orchard. So,
Well, you're into this, newly into this, but you seem to be thriving here.
You came just in time. So with the ships kind of just starting to rise up above the waves here. It's been it's been a lot of work opening and a lot of training, but I feel like the last week or so everything's really starting to come together, which is exciting.
Well, listeners, there's so much more to say. I mean, they buy whole lambs. He butchers, whole animals, period, right?
Yes.
Do you do pigs too?
Yeah. Yeah, and we try to bring the whole animal whenever possible. So duck, guinea hen, rabbit, whole pig, whole lamb.
Yeah.
And as we get settled in here, we're going to do more and more of that.
But that's a physical exertion.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
But you like
work.
It.
But yeah, we all enjoy it, definitely.
Oh,
everybody
damn.
Gets excited to see the whole animals coming in and learn what you can do with all the different parts.
Well, I really love this place, and I love your cooking, and I'm so pleased to finally have met you and got to know your style, and I want to come back and eat some more. I love your food.
Well, thank you very much.
And, of course, Nathan, we wish you every success in this venture, which we're sure you're going to have.
Thanks again.
Thanks, Nathan.
You're welcome.
And I guess that's a good time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. As I always do at this time, I say stay connected. Let us know what you're thinking. Check our website. Email us. Check out Facebook.
Check out the ever-present Twitter.
Yeah.
And you have ways of reaching us through all those means right on our webpage. Just click on the appropriate link. And we'll certainly look forward to hearing from you. And we're still in Portland, Oregon in this segment, in fact, for the rest of the program. And the rest of the program is the content was all derived from a single landmark event. And Stephen, representing the Jupiter Hotel in Portland, is going to start out explaining that. And then you'll hear from some of the wonderful food and beverage producers that we met while we were there.
And it's called Indulge.
Okay, Stephen Castle. explain the Jupiter Hotel in Portland, Oregon.
Well, the Jupiter Hotel is an 80-room cultural boutique hotel nestled in the inner southeast area of Portland, Oregon. And we are surrounded by amazing restaurants and amazing first-rate distilleries.
And we're here tonight for a special reason, so tell us about that.
Yes, we're here for an event called Indulge, which is literally how the name sounds. It's we want people to come here and indulge themselves on the newest, the hottest of Portland's restaurants, distilleries, and vineyards, and come and meet the chefs and have great tastes of small bites and sips of amazing signature cocktails.
And this hasn't been going on for years. This is a new venture.
Right. This is a first-time event for the Jupiter. We decided as an anchor business in the Lower Burnside area of Portland that we are surrounded by incredible culinary institutions, and we really wanted to take this opportunity to showcase those establishments and to let people see that their city has a lot of amazing different options to offer.
Now, we've heard about Gabe Rucker and Le Pigeon, which is just three doors down the street.
Yes,
but
literally.
There are some other places, too, that we're going to try to probably catch up with this evening.
Yes, you're gonna be able to taste restaurants such as Biwa, Beaker and Flask. We have a new restaurant in the block called Laurelhurst Market, which is a sister restaurant to Simpatica, which are all Portland favorites and use only local ingredients and shop locally from local sustainable farms.
And there's another thing going on. There's an undercurrent of a different kind with the word currant or grape being underneath that. There's some interesting stuff going on with the fruit of the vine and the fruit of other alcoholic beverages.
Absolutely. Well, we are featuring six of Portland's best distilleries, all located within a mile of the hotel, featuring everything from locally made gin, vodka, and rums. And I believe we have a few whiskeys on hand tonight.
Now, who started? There was one particular guy who really started this. I think, who made Calvados, but in Oregon. Do you know who that is?
You know, I am unfamiliar with that,
okay.
But I'll take your word
for it. There was somebody here who got it started, but then somebody in Portland really picked up on it.
Right. Well, a lot of people in Portland have picked up on the trend, that's for sure.
And this is unusual because isn't Oregon a liquor-controlled state?
It is a liquor-controlled state, but, you know, as well as being a liquor-controlled state, Oregon thrives on bringing the best talent together and producing exceptional products, not just in the Pacific Northwest, but on a worldwide level. We import, we export products, all of these distilleries, to places like Japan and overseas to Europe as well.
But it seems like a funny thing that you can set up a still, and yet you have to sell your product through a state-controlled
through a liquor store.
Store.
Yeah, well, you know, I can't speak for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, but I can speak for Portlanders, and I can say that, well, sometimes it can be a nuisance. We can still get what we want.
Okay. So what are we going to – give me a couple of examples of what we might be sampling in just a few minutes.
So tonight you're going to be sampling some locally made cosmopolitans, which I believe are going to be using Oregon cranberries, as well as a variety of different signature cocktails, which I'm unfamiliar with. But I do know that we're going to be doing baby carrot cakes this evening, along with fried green tomatoes from the Doug Fur Lounge.
And so this is more on the food side.
There's food and beverage tonight.
Okay.
Yes.
But the Doug Fur, we had breakfast there this morning. It was very good.
Yeah. The Doug Fur is what we could definitely call a home style joint, if you will, with a rock music flair to it.
Okay. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us. The website of the Jupiter Hotel is
www.jupiterhotel.com.
And is this likely to become an annual event, do you think?
I would think so. I think you'll tell me afterwards and let me know.
There we go. Well, we'll definitely do that. And Stephen, thank you so much for joining us on the menu.
Thank you.
Now, I'm going to have to ask David Kreifels to explain this operation because I think I'm a little lost. We're talking about a catering company called Simpatica. We're talking about a Laurelhurst Market, which is inside a restaurant.
Yes.
Just explain what you're doing, David. I know you're here with good stuff.
We are, yeah. We started off as a catering company and a butcher shop about 5 years ago. And we had a butcher shop named Beyond Meats and Sausages in Northwest Portland. At the same time, we had a catering company named Simpatica, which also ran a dining hall. About a year ago, maybe not even that, we sold off Beyond Meats and Sausage, which was our butcher shop.
What does Beyond mean?
Beyond is just a French for meat. It's just French for, it just means meat.
Oh, Beyond.
Beyond.
V-I-A-N-D.
V-I-A-N-D, yes, exactly. So, well, a long story short, we had an idea to open a restaurant. We really wanted to do a steakhouse, and we thought, what else better to have the front of this restaurant be a butcher shop? So when right when you walk in the door, you see this 8 or 10 foot meat case in front of you that operates from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. daily. And then you make a left and you walk into this 60 seat dining room with a full bar and an open kitchen. And that operates every night but Tuesdays. Wow. And we do that and we focus heavily on meats.
It's all called Laurelhurst Market.
It's all called Laurelhurst Market. We remodeled, we purchased a old rundown mini mart up on 32nd and East Burnside. And we operated under the same name of Laurelhurst Market. And we thought, yeah, and we thought what better than to just keep it the same name, and it's kind of an honor to the neighborhood, and, you know, they had to deal with
the next big celebrity. We had celebrity chefs, then we have celebrity farmers, the next thing is celebrity butchers, so there you are.
I could take not much credit for the butcher side of it. That I leave to one of my partners, Ben Dyer. He has himself and a highly talented staff run the butcher shop. And myself, I head up the kitchen with Chef Cuisine.
What kind of meat is it? Is it all organic, natural?
We do it, yeah. All organic, as much as possible organic. Grass-fed meat, or at least grass-fed and then grain-finished meat. A lot of times these grass-fed operations will have to finish on grain for the last few months.
Can you order it online?
You cannot order us online yet. We do mail out some pâtés. That we make. We make, at all times, we have about 6 or 7 pâtés and about 7 or 8 different kinds of our own house-made sausages in the case. And those can be mailed out, yes.
And what is the online ordering?
We don't have online ordering as of now. We're getting a website. We're so new. We're about 4 months old.
You're doing really well.
We opened in May. And today, mid to late September now. So 4 or 5 months old now. And we're in the process of getting a new website put up. Right now we have just a kind of an amateurish website that we created for ourselves called LaurelhurstMarket.com. And
people find out about you.
People find out about us. We've built quite a big clientele through Simpatica, through our website there, through SimpaticaCatering.com. And through there you can sign up for an email list.
Okay.
And every Tuesday night you'll get mailed the menus for the upcoming weekend's dinners at Simpatica. Not Laurelhurst Market, but Simpatica.
What is one of your signature dishes?
Signature dishes at Laurelhurst Market? We do a great 12-hour smoked brisket. We do a Wagyu brisket.
Sign me up for that one.
Yeah, we do a Ozark barbecue sauce. So we mix a little bit of Texas, a little bit of the Ozarks with that. We also do a ribeye from Nyman Ranch. We do that with just a simple blue cheese butter and fried onion rings. We do a lot of the classics. We have a great steak tartare. We have some salt cod fritters, which we're actually doing tonight. That's what we're featuring tonight.
What are you doing tonight?
Yeah,
the salt cod fritters
is one of our specialties on our appetizer menu up at Laurelhurst Market. That's what we're doing tonight. So,
well, will you please keep on the menu posted on what you're doing next?
The menus
really
are always online. The updated menu is always on LaurelhurstMarket.com. You can always find it there. And then for the Simpatica stuff, you can Simpatica Catering. And there's links back and forth to each of them on our website. So.
Well, thank you so much, because
I know
you're the only one manning that booth. I don't want to.
Yeah, hopefully the oil's not on fire right now, but I'll get back to
that. Go back, take care of it.
We'll get back and check on that, and we'll change it if we have to. But, yeah, thank you very
much. Thanks, David.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Jocelyn Barda has a business with her husband called Bakery Bar, also, of course, in Portland. And she's really doing well. She's 2 locations now. Tell us a little bit about your business. You're a, what do you call them, imports, or you're not from here?
I'm not from here, no.
But you've been for a long time?
Yeah, I've lived here for about 14 or 15 years now.
So you qualify probably in other places not, but here as a native, almost.
Well, I don't know if you ever
really
qualify.
Are they funny about that?
I think so.
Okay. But so you ended up here. I don't know why, but you opened this bakery. And you now have a second location, but what is your specialty? Tell us a little bit about the purpose of your bakery and what it's about.
Okay, our first location is pretty small, and so our specialty was custom cakes, wedding cakes, and things like that. And then we also have a cafe where we serve, you know, breakfast pastries and coffee. And our second location, we expanded, and now we do like a full breakfast.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. And we just have more product. It's just bigger. It's a bigger space. We have outdoor seating and a really big, nice big kitchen.
Now, we're celebrating the southeastern quadrant of Portland. But are your locations in this quadrant, or are they?
My first location is in Southeast, down on Water Avenue in the industrial area, and the second location is in Northeast. It's on Northeast Gleason. So it's
so,
not.
But specialty cakes, what do you mean by that? Wedding cakes? Really elaborately decorated ones?
Sometimes they're elaborate. Specialty cakes just means custom celebration
fondant
cakes, birthday cakes. Yeah, we decorate with fondant. We kind of have a stylized look, I guess.
What is your style?
Look.
Oh, modern?
It's kind of a modern, clean look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And been the big revelation you've had in terms of owning. Is this your first bakery?
Yeah, it's our first business. I own it with my husband, Dan.
What is your big revelation in being in this kind of a retail bakery business?
It's definitely a labor of love. You know, it's all-consuming. It's like having a baby. But it's really fun, and we meet lots of awesome people, and we have really, really great staff. And so it's like working with people that you're close to.
What's your favorite flavor of cake?
I have to say my favorite cake that we make is our chocolate devil's food.
Oh, yeah.
It's our best seller.
Dark chocolate?
Yeah, it's a dark chocolate, and it's kind of a light, fluffy texture. And
now, are you
really
responsible
good.
For all those cupcakes out there?
Yes.
This cupcake phase is now extended to Japan. Craze is now extended to Japan.
Oh, really?
Japan and China are all into cupcakes. All started from Magnolia Bakery in Manhattan.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
But you have to keep the standard up. Our friend Jocelyn, she just fired her cupcake bakery. She used to go every Saturday for a cupcake, and she said, I don't go. I said, aren't you going anymore? She said, I'm not going anymore because the quality isn't the same.
Right.
So what do you say to that?
Well, I mean, quality control is very important, obviously, if you want to keep your customers.
Do you do all this allergy stuff now, gluten-free and all that?
We don't. We do a little bit. We've started to do, there's a really big demand here for vegan product. We've started to do some vegan scones and some vegan cookies. And once wedding season dies down at the end of October, we're going to start doing some testing to do some vegan cakes.
So, anyhow, I wish you luck, and thank you for talking.
Yeah, thank you.
And if you want a cupcake in Poland, this is the place to go, right?
That's right.
Bakery Bar on the Menu is making quite a lot of new friends at this event. We now have a new restaurant called Beaker and Flask, which is, in fact, new because it's only been open in Portland for a few months. We're interviewing the chef, Benjamin Bettinger, he's a transplant, essentially. Are you not, Benjamin?
This is true. I'm originally from Vermont.
Okay, but you have worked for a while in Portland, including at Paley's Place, which actually is where we're having dinner tonight.
Wonderful, yeah. I spent 6 years at Paley's Place when I first got to town, and I've been here for just over about 8 years, and 6 of the years we're at Paley's Place, and now I'm on the new adventures. Just opened the restaurant Beaker and Flask, and we're in our first few months, and it's going really well. So.
Okay, and I mean, this fits into the theme of this event tonight because it's in this neighborhood.
It is. We're located just a few blocks away on the corner of 7th and Washington, Southeast.
Okay, and your mission is you're a locavore restaurant.
We are not only a restaurant.
Explain that.
We are a restaurant and bar, so we're featuring high-end cocktails with just a lot of uniqueness to them, and the food is kind of meant to go with it. Again, featuring a lot of local farmers and seasonality.
What are some of the local farms you use?
Right now I work with Creative Growers.
Tell me about that.
Dave Hoyle is the primary farmer, and he's somebody that I worked with for years at Paley's Place and just developed a great relationship. So again, luckily, I worked with so many great farmers at Paley's Place that I've been able to extend that relationship and bring them to Beaker and Flask with me as well.
And they all, these farmers have been here forever? Are they natives or what?
No, I think most of them are transplants or, you know, just got these farmers. A lot of these farmers are new, up-and-coming farmers, 10 years old, and just kind of sorting it out now.
So they're tuned into the same kind of thing you're tuned into.
They are. They, you know, I've always said that we can't do what we do without them, because their product is what makes the food that we provide.
Okay.
So.
But for them, they've returned to the land. because that's what they wanted to do.
Probably had former careers, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of them had former careers, probably even tech guys, and now they realize, let's get back to the roots here and use the land that we have. And
what are you serving tonight?
Tonight we have three different little snacks. We have a chicken liver crustini, we have a mackerel escabeche, and we also
have... That sounds really good. I've got to taste that one.
Yeah, and we also have a milos, which is a semolina cake, with piperad, which is braised peppers, and aioli. So three little bite-sized snacks for people to taste, a little bit of everything.
Now, what are a couple of the things you're proudest of on your menu at Beaker and Flask?
Right now, some of the big shiners are some grilled pork cheeks.
Now that sounds really, really
so for,
good.
Yeah, first we confit them for a long time to get them really tender, and then grill them to order with the braised peppers, pickled octopus, and aioli.
That sounds great, too.
So that's definitely a big hit right now. Sweetbreads are something that we've had on the menu for a while now.
Are you open for lunch?
No, we just do dinner. We do dinner six nights a week.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, we do dinner six nights a week.
It happens to us all the time. We come to a place for a week, and then immediately we have enough places we have to come back for another week.
Well, there's a lot of amazing restaurants in Portland. Well,
how about giving your website?
Website, the website's still up and running. We are, okay. Like I said, we're just 3 months old, and
at least plug a phone number in.
Beakerandflask.com.
There you go. That'll give you at least a start there, and you can find a lot of hits on the internet about us as well.
Anyhow, terrific talking to you.
I think you better go out and make sure we got some of this.
It's time to go make some food. I've seen the people. I've seen the people pouring in, so we better get some food on that table for them.
Well, we'll see you in a few minutes.
You called Benjamin or Ben?
Benjamin, Ben, Benny. I've got many names.
I'm going to call you Benjamin.
All right. Thank you.
Good luck in this current venture.
Thank you so much. Pleasure speaking with you guys. Absolutely.
Bye. Well, I must say that this is a fascinating and growing, trendy part of Portland, the southeast part, and we had a wonderful time. But anyhow, now it's time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Of course, you're listening to Ann and Peter Haig of On the Menu Radio, as you usually do at this time on Sunday morning, or whenever it is your habit to listen. And the next segment is really a fascinating part of the Portland, Oregon story that we knew just a little bit about. But
I don't think I knew anything about it.
No, well, I knew a little bit about it, but not the extent of the development of handcrafted distilled spirits. Which happens to be concentrated in this southeast area of Portland where we were. So we had a chance to sample several different varieties and talk to two of the producers, and their stories I think you'll find very interesting.
And it's quite good stuff. I'm just amazed in a state-controlled liquor situation.
Well, it's really fascinating to see such a movement, and thank goodness not all of it was treacly sweet either.
No.
Even the vodka made with honey just really tasted like regular good quality vodka. But anyway, let's have our distillers tell the story.
Well, there's so much going on at this event. We're on a general learning curve, and our next problem, not problem, next joy of learning comes from talking to Ryan. Oh, you did tell me again.
Chonky,
who is a co-owner and distiller of a company called Artisan Spirits here in Portland, which is handcrafted liquors. And there's a huge backstory, which I haven't even heard yet, and we're going to ask Ryan to tell us about it.
Well, we started with the Apia vodka, which is distilled from honey.
Which I love, because I worry about bees.
Exactly, and it's a little scary because we're still not, as far as I understand, we're still not exactly sure what's going on with colony collapse disorder. But the inspiration for the product came from my partner's wife, who has a family that lives in rural Russia. And they've been beekeepers for generations, and they've made vodka in the backyard for generations. And being beekeepers, they have access to honey, so it's natural that they use their own honey as the base for Manimal. So as Shane, Eric, and I grew up together, we've been friends since high school. Here in Portland, yeah, we went to Sunset High School a long, long time ago. The three of us would
this?
Always...
No.
No, I've the other two.
This?
Yes,
both
of those.
I'm actually trying this because I hadn't tried it before. Yeah.
So Shane would go back and visit the in-laws in West Central Russia, and he'd always bring back some of this homemade honey vodka, and we thought, well, nobody's doing anything like this anywhere commercially that we know of, and let's try it. And so,
now is this honey here?
No, these are both the Martin Ryan. These are both made with Columbia Valley Syrah based vodka. So the other vodka that I'm making is Columbia Valley Syrah that we distill into vodka. So it's all local wine. It's all Southern Washington fruit that we begin with.
But they're whole new drinks. They're really exciting.
Well, the drinks are completely different as well. The drinks, the first one was cucumber with the Martin Ryan vodka, which is the wine based vodka. And then we have a little bit of citronge, which is an orange liqueur made by Patron, fresh lime juice, and fresh cucumber. Then the second drink, the Whippet, has the Martin Ryan vodka again with a little bit of Aperol, which is an Italian, slightly bitter Italian Aperol. Aperitif, and a little bit of fresh grapefruit juice, and soda.
But you guys, you're not naive and just started. You sound really sophisticated about this process.
Well, I am the owner of the distiller. I'm the one that runs around and sells it. I do the painting and plumbing around the distillery. I'm the janitor as well. So we really are hands-on. We've done everything ourselves. My partner, Eric, has done all of the legal work. So we haven't really outsourced anything. So we really wanted to be hands-on and really do everything ourselves because...
Where do you sell this and how?
Well, we're in Oregon, Washington, and Illinois at this point. So in Oregon, it's a control state, which means you have to buy your alcohol from the OLCC.
And
so, so state liquor stores here in Oregon. And Washington's the same way, state liquor stores. I always tell people, if you don't see it in your local liquor store, ask for it. We are listed with the OLCC, so they can get it as long as people are asking for it. And so that's something that will really help us out.
You don't have an online thing?
No. Each state is completely regulated differently, so it's very difficult for a small company like us to weed through 50 different sets of legal regulation.
What will you do next, then, for advancing your business?
Take over the world.
So you'll go out of the
U.S. We're working on expanding beyond Oregon, and we just shipped our first couple of cases to Chicago, so we have a distributor there now. I'll be traveling to New York next month to promote the product now in front of some national media. We are in Washington as well, so we're starting to get some traction with some of the Seattle bars that really feature handcrafted spirits and are bringing back the art of crafting cocktails in a traditional way. And so we're slowly starting to move out and expand. San Francisco's another market that we're starting to
What about China and Japan? That seems to be the really big place to go.
Definitely. And the thing is, we're just not quite that big yet. We've been around for just over a year now.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's taken us 3 years to get to this point, but we've had product on the shelf for just over a year now, which is really exciting. But
give me an idea of your production.
We're still a very small company. We're doing 25 cases per production run, which really allows us to focus on quality and keep it as a handcrafted product.
Clean tasting. I mean, I don't know.
I'd love for you to come by our room because I'm pouring tasters just of the vodka by itself, too. And the thing that we're doing, because we're using honey and wine as our base ingredient and distilling on a very small scale, that allows me to really keep the essence and flavor of that honey in the vodka or really capture the spirit of that wine and retain a little bit of that flavor. And what I'm doing, because I'm distilling it from scratch, I can be very selective about the heart cut, which actually becomes part of the product, and I can remove the heads and tails and come out with a very clean product off the still, which means I don't have to filter it as much as somebody that's a big company that's going for maximum volume and yield.
I'm going to yield actually to Peter because I don't know anything about heads and tails.
I think.
When you're distilling,
what's happening is he's saying we're taking the best part and we're stepping up to the plate.
A very small selection of the best of the best parts.
We're saying we'll throw the rest of it away.
Exactly.
Because if I get somebody to sample my stuff, I want to make sure it's really good. So
exactly. And so I'm being very selective about the heart cut, which is the part that we keep for the actual product. And so I get a very pure, clean product off the still, which still has some flavor to it. But because I don't have the impurities, I don't have to filter or over-filter it to where it doesn't taste like anything. And so that's why the vodkas still have a little bit of essence of their base material. Keep some of the honey nose and a little bit of that so, sweetness and mouthfeel of the honey in the finished product.
So, guys, when you hear the name Artisan Spirits,
exactly,
in the future, you'll remember that you heard it first at On the Menu Radio, which, of course, where you hear all about these things first. Ryan, thank you so much for joining
us. Ryan, good luck. You really are so
thank you both very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
We must let you go back to pour some more of this stuff for all the other guests.
Well, I actually would rather be here having a drink with you two than I'll let my partner pour for a little while. But I've got to say, this has been, you said you heard it here first. Well, this is the first radio interview I've ever done. So
you did very well.
This is my first, so I hope
you're
I did
so
okay.
You're so enthusiastic. You conveyed that to everybody.
I believe in the product. I think we're doing the right thing. You know, not only are we making it locally, we're using local raw ingredients. So it's not only made here in Portland, but we're supporting local agriculture, which
and
is really
your bees are here.
Exactly. Our bees visit raspberry blossoms just outside of Eugene, which if you're not from Portland, that's about 100 miles south of here.
I know.
And then our honey comes from Columbia Valley. So all of our raw materials are local. And that's really what a great event like this is for as well. You know, supporting EcoTrust and bringing local farm food into the school program. And
that's
one of the reasons we're here. We think this is a great event and a great program, and it really is conducive to what our core values and beliefs are as a company and what we're trying to do with our products.
Anne's asking me, Peter, why are you so slow? And I said, because I can only do one thing at a time. But the one thing at a time I'm doing next is having fun, because I'm talking to a man whose business card says distiller.
That's
Matt
true.
Mount from House Spirits Distillery. You were telling me just a second ago where distillers come from in Oregon, so tell me again.
Right now, we're seeing a lot of the distilleries popping up from people that are coming both from the production side, you know, being brewers or winemakers, and also from actually using the spirits, being bar owners, bartenders, that are interested in using things from the area, taking these skills that they either have or want to learn and kind of run with what Oregon really has, is this entrepreneurial
spirit.
Now,
you're one of those, right?
Sure.
You're a bartender.
I was a bartender first by trade, not
can
a chemist.
Can I mention you're
chemist.
Wearing a lei?
Yes.
And serving tiki drinks as well. I'm beginning to get the impression from talking to everybody that Portland is kind of a melting pot.
It is, absolutely, yeah. It's a place that a lot of people make their way from New York now, from Texas.
Because why? It's a nice place to live.
It's a great place to live, yeah.
There's
yeah.
lots of opportunity.
Yes, lots of opportunities. And also I think that there is a lot of support for entrepreneur pursuits. People break away from being, you know, chefs in restaurants and open up their own place, and they'll have a great following and support from the place that they leave. And so I think that it continues throughout all the industries within Oregon.
But there's this cool thing, Matt. You said to me a minute ago, it costs $100 to have a license to be a distiller.
In Oregon it does, yes.
I mean, I have no idea. I'm sure in Pennsylvania it's not even allowed.
Yeah, it's true. There's definitely places throughout the U.S. where you can't distill. But it's a booming industry right now across the nation. Right now in Oregon, you know, we're still running small distilleries here than anywhere else in the all of U.S. So we got 20 distilleries right now.
Is that just because there are things here to distill, or is it?
Well,
there's this entrepreneurial spirit as well.
It's the entrepreneurial spirit, and I think it's also a combination. I mean, you've got a lot of support. There's a lot of places that are opening up now in Portland, especially, that are going to carry only Oregon spirits.
Because it's a logovore kind of place.
Yeah, and we can offer it now. So you've got great local wines, great local beers, and now you have great local spirits.
Great
so.
Local vodka.
Right, this is a Madoya vodka that we make at House Spirits Distillery. So yes, we do.
And you have a signature on this or not?
Well, you know, it's a Russian Polish style vodka. Vodka traditionally came from that area, Eastern Europe, and the vodka's there. But there's not a big cocktail culture, so our style is a vodka that you can enjoy on the rocks like you're having it, just on its own. It has nice mouthfeel, some richness. So, and what's really great to see is that with all these distilleries, the 20 distilleries in Oregon, we're not seeing a lot of competition. We're seeing a lot of camaraderie. That's the idea. So we're really kind of working together. We built this distillery row, kind of little co-op kind of thing. So right here in Southeast, where we're at, within a 16-block radius, there's 5 distilleries.
So you're right in the same neighborhood.
Yes.
With all the people associated with this event.
Right, exactly, now, yeah.
let's be honest, because we've seen the distillation process of bourbon, of cognac, mm-hmm.
single malt scotch in Scotland.
It's really not all that complicated.
No, it's not. And I think that's another reason why people are getting into it. If you're a brewer and you understand fermentation and making a wash to turn to beer, I mean, you're two-thirds the way of actually making whiskey. So
you really don't need a bathtub to make gin.
No. I mean, there is a lot of craftsmanship to it. I mean, it really, there's something about making great spirits. I mean, people can start making spirits, but I think that we're finding in the region there's a lot of really talented people making products, all sorts of products. So,
okay, but do you have aspirations to actually produce a world famous spirit?
Well, you know, we're doing okay with our aviation gin right now. I mean, it's international, and it's still very homegrown and very bootstrappy. I mean, we're a very small facility still, but we have that gin in 20 states and 9 countries currently. So
pretty big.
It's pretty good. And even though I mentioned that, we're very modest about it. We're very thankful for the support. I mean, still in Oregon, we sell more of all of our products than anywhere else in the country. So.
Well, Matt, we're impressed. We thank you for joining
us
on the menu.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to have to shut down this interview so I can sip more of my
Akavit. Please enjoy your Akavit. So. Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah.
A taste for the taste buds on food, or the taste buds on cocktails. There was a little wine as well.
They love cocktails amazed.
Well, maybe it's kind of chilly. Who knows? And the aquavit that Artisan, I think it was, made, certainly was the thing for a cold morning to get your system started. And it tasted pretty good, too. And samples of the food were excellent. We were disappointed that our dining scene for the rest of the week was filled up, so we didn't have a chance to go to Laurelhurst and Beaker and Flask and the other places.
Yeah,
who
there were
there.
Some real surprises, and I don't know, we haven't mentioned that, in fact, when we went to the we'll talk about this game chef cook-off while about game, that actually the Laurelhurst chef, David Kreifels, he won. He took first place.
There you go. So he must have been pretty good.
He was good.
So anyway, more about Portland, Oregon next week. Just so that you know, we'll be talking about all the events surrounding a wild game festival that was taking place. That really was the thing that triggered our trip to the Northwest, and I'm sure you'll find that really fascinating. Not just figures from the Portland area, but our old friend Tom Douglas from Seattle was there. We had a chance to talk to him. So on the whole, it was a whole lot of fun. And you can share it next week. Same time, same place.
Bye-bye.